I had no idea that turnip spoiled, so I was... I wish... I've never wanted to be in a game more than to be in this shitty town watching this shitty mayor scoop rotten turnips out of his locker at the train station. Like, what could have helped you build faith in your town less than seeing the mayor like, oh, this is disgusting.
What have I done?
All those tens of thousands of, like, this is what the city's money is going. No wonder the Rossetti Center isn't done yet. You're literally just like letting our money rot in a train station locker.
Oh, Animal Crossing, I love you.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Dave Tack, and I know the best thing of the week.
My name is Christopher Plant, and I know the best thing of the week.
My name is Russ Frostrick, and I know the best game of the week.
He lives next to someone. Think about that for a second. He lives in a house next to other houses.
It's an apartment, so it's actually like I'm bordered by many apartments.
Think about that wake-up call. I'd rather have Robin Williams in the apartment adjacent doing the good morning Vietnam
every how's it going
morning.
I'm a doctor.
Have you met my daughter Zelda?
I'm the Pitts. We big week in gaming, and we've got a lot to talk about this week. I've been playing some fun stuff, some enjoyable games.
Maybe you should go first then.
I would like that, actually. That would be nice. Let me remember what the thing was that I was going to talk about. Yes, the best family tree of gaming 2013 belongs to the Rogues, I guess I'll call them. The Rogue Legacy family of adventurers in the hit indie PC game Rogue Legacy. Now, am I alone in having played Rogue Legacy?
Yeah, I wanted to play it, but it's PC only, and I only got a Mac in this piece.
I hope that when games like Rogue Legacy are released, that Microsoft counts it as like the massive failure that it is. This game is not on their platform, because
Microsoft, it's on
PC. Course, but they're not getting like a slice of that, you know. This isn't on their marketplace,
right?
So Rogue Legacy is here. It's similar to a Castlevania game, if you can imagine that, a very difficult Castlevania game where the castle regenerates every time you play, and each time you start a new run on the castle, you are actually the descendant of the character that just played through. So just to give you sort of an example of what it might look like, I make a run at the castle. I've got a barbarian, let's say, so he's really tough, but he doesn't hit as hard as some of the other classes. He has one magic spell that is assigned to him that he can use. And all this is randomly generated, and you have basically three different children to choose from. He makes a run on the castle. He collects a lot of gold, but doesn't do much else. Okay, he dies. He's killed on like a spike trap, let's say.
Sad.
And then it is sad. And then you're taken back to the title screen, and you start again, and you're given a choice between one of his three kids. Each one will have a different class. They have traits that can affect things positively or negatively, like color blindness, for example, which makes the whole screen gray, or...
Oh, that's not funny.
No. A vertigo, which makes everything upside down, or which sucks and doesn't happen a lot, but... or, like, dwarfism. So they're smaller. They hit just as hard and everything, but they're smaller, and that lets them get into some tight spots.
Are they craftier?
No, they're not craftier.
They're not running the realm secretly.
No, no, no Tyrion influences here. They're just smaller. And you choose between one of these three kids, and you inherit all of the there are some stuff that's permanent on each run that you collect. You collect runes that lets you augment your skills. You can collect skill upgrades, collect armor.
Can you collect zunes?
No, there's no zunes in the castle. Okay. If you're going to interrupt, please just try and make it funny. That's all I ask. Just one solid joke. That's all I need. I'd hate to kill you and have your kid take over your spot on the podcast. So all that stuff is passed down to the next generation, as well as all the gold you collected on the previous run. So that gold you have to spend on new equipment, stat upgrades, upgrades to classes, new classes. And the gold that you don't use is actually taken from you as soon as you walk into the castle. It's charged at the gate. So you have to spend it all or you're going to lose it.
Okay, so here's my question, because I love roguelikes. This definitely sounds like a roguelike.
It is.
So what are the things...
Roguelite, they call it.
Oh, so that's a good point, actually, that addresses what I'm about to talk about, is one of the things I like about roguelikes, which I realize that a lot of people don't like, is that you start pretty much from scratch every time you play. And the reason I like it is because it creates this infinite new experience loop. Where you never really beat a game, you're just essentially getting better at it. It sounds to me like because there's so much that carries over and unlocks, that eventually you get to a point where pretty much everything is unlocked and you're just it's just a matter of just like plowing through the final boss.
Let me say this, there's so much to unlock. I mean, to give you an example, there are 75 levels of health you can increase. And 75, I believe, 75 levels of
love.
Like 75 levels of belief. No, 75 levels of like the percentage of times you get a critical hit. It's very much about choosing the path you want to take. Like, for example, even with the armor, you buy new armor, but it has weight to it. So you have to spend money to upgrade your basically armor class, like how much armor you can carry with you. So there's so much that you can unlock and upgrade that it's not really like, well, I've got everything now and now I'm going to make a run at the castle. I mean, it's very much there are four sort of central sections. There's the main castle you start out in. There's a place called Maya that's sort of the light area that's above you. There's a forest that's always to one side of the main castle. And then there's a land of darkness that's below the castle. Each one of those is harder than the central castle. So the progression is very much, you know, play the castle over and over and over again until you can finally finish the boss of the castle. And then you can start making your way into the forest and you play the forest over and over. And that's what you're focusing on.
Interesting.
So there's a boss at the end of each of the sections. So it really does require you to, and in each section there's new enemies that have new attack patterns.
Yeah, no, but
and tons
it does
of new stuff for you to learn.
It does seem to me like essentially not like it's a free to play game and you're paying to win, but essentially it's not super skill centric in that you know what I mean?
I'll hop in because I like Russ, I prefer something like Spelunky or even Binding of Isaac where it's like a full reset. Because I feel like I'm progressing because of skill.
Right.
While with a lot of free-to-play games or roguelites, it's hard for me to get into them because all I think every time I get an upgrade is like, am I actually getting better at this game? Or is this game just making itself easier?
Are the values just being like tilted in that favor?
But having played some of Rogue Legacy, it seems like a really comfortable in-between for two reasons. And one is like Justin's saying, you can kind of... One, it's difficult, so you do have to have skill just to get through it.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, and two, you're kind of adjusting your family line in a way that you have to have a skill in how you do that. But the third thing, which is kind of related, that I really like about the game is the story matches the gameplay. Like, what you're really doing is grinding, which drives me crazy about these types of games, where you're just trying to, you know... Not just get better, but also unlock as much as possible. But this whole story of family lines kind of softens the blow of the grinding because you feel a weird connection to all the characters, and like you want one to make it as far as it can, and you want to see what its children are going to look like. I don't know, in that way, I think the story, as little as there is, really benefits the entire game.
The other thing that I think helps soften the blow of, you know, paying to win or what have you, is with each run, you have to pick a class, and you actually don't get to pick. You have three different options that have been sort of randomly rolled for you.
How many classes are there?
I haven't even unlocked all of them. There's a barbarian who's super strong. There's an assassin that's crafty, or, you know, does more critical hits and is a little bit faster. It can also turn into a puff of smoke to avoid certain things. There's a mage that's focused on the magic spells that can switch between spells. The only class that can do that. There's a lich king that is really interesting because he starts with really low health, and then with every kill, his health increases. So his max health increases.
But there's a bunch, essentially.
There's
a lot. Just like
and the class that you pick and the class you can depend on, or the class that you go with into the castle, really dictates how you're going to approach that run at the castle. There's a miner, for example, that knows where all the...
Like a little kid, you mean?
No. Well, I guess they're all kids. No, they're not kids. They're like adults. There's a miner with an E who has really low health and really low magic, but all the coins that he collects, he gets like 30% more treasure for each pickup. Yeah. So it's like, okay, if I got a miner, I know what this run's about. It's about finding as much treasure as I can. And there's so many things in the cat. Like, there's fairy chests that have runes in them, and those are basically like challenge rooms where it's like, get through this really trap heavy room without taking damage, or kill everybody in this room that's like jam packed with enemies. And taking it on is very much sort of a risk reward question of, well, I can do this, but it might cost me so much that I'm going to have to abandon my dream of, you know, making a run at the boss this go. Because if I do this room, I'm just not going to have the health to get through it. So you're making those sorts of decisions every time you play, which helps keep it super varied and makes every run really interesting. And I'm not a big fan of the roguelike that sort of starts you out to zero every time. And that's, I think, what's attracted me so much to Rogue Legacy is it is skill-based. You do need a lot of practice to get good at it, but you always have something to show for your run.
Yeah, you're not every death isn't like a crushing defeat that sets you back to zero.
Exactly. And now, interestingly, it does get to a point where to upgrade anything, like I'm at a point now where to upgrade any of my skills, to buy anything, to get any armor, I need at least 1,000 gold coins. So, and I know that metric doesn't mean anything to you, but it's a decent amount. If I don't get 1,000 gold coins in that run, then I don't get anything, which does sort of force you to, okay, you've got to at least be good enough to get the amount of coins you need to upgrade. It's a really cool game. I think it's $15. You can buy it from their website.
Steam. I'm waiting for. Vita. This sounds like such a good Vita game.
It would be great. Yeah. It would be a great Xbox 360 game. Yeah. Just like put it on your platform. I don't know.
Maybe it'll come to indie
games. That's not going to happen.
Nah, it's not going to happen. They don't care anymore.
Okay.
But yeah, Rogue Legacy is really, really, really fun. I wrote some dumb fan fiction about it on Polygon. I'm so sort of obsessed with it.
How will people find that?
Just go to polygon.com, and it's mine, so I keep a pin for longer because I wrote it.
What's the title of the piece, though?
Just so I think it's Opinion, the something. I don't know. Plant right there.
Okay.
The Legacy of the Rogues.
The Legacy of the
family.
Rogues.
Wow, that's great.
Legacy of the Rogue family.
Search engine optimization.
Hey, can you do me a favor and shut the hell up?
You don't need search engine optimization when you're the managing editor. You can just keep it pinned to the top of the site.
Good point. Okay. I'll go next if no one feels obliged to go next.
Please.
Great.
I want to give the best turning point of the week, for me at least, even though I realize this game is a few weeks old, and that is for Last of Us.
Are we going to finally talk about it?
We are finally going to talk about Last of Us. Get excited. So how many of us have played Last of Us?
I have.
Okay. Everyone. That's everyone, right? Okay, so I should mention that I'm about 6 or 7 hours into the game. I haven't beaten it. I'm probably like a third based on what I'm hearing in terms of the length. And I will also say that apart from the intro, the first like 10 minutes, which are quite good and pretty impactful, if maybe a ripoff of Dawn of the Dead, still really awesome and well done. The first 5 hours of the game are really bad. Like, really bad. To the point where I was like, I have no idea why people are excited about this game. Mm-hmm. It's dull. It's typical. These stealth sequences are, like, really basic and boring and linear. And I'm failing for no reason, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. At this point, I'm, like, ready to quit on the game. But, like, I'm seeing all these tens and, like, people are bonker jerks over it. So I felt like, to be part of the zeitgeist, the conversation, I needed to play through more of it. And there's a very clear turning point, at least for me. There's a moment where you essentially, I won't give any major spoilers, but you essentially come to this, like, forested area outside of a small town. And it was from there on out that the game really turned for me, because I think the developers really take the handhold off and let you sort of go wherever you want and handle combat situations however you want. And the game is way, way bigger than I thought it was, at least in terms of the environments. Like, you're dealing with, like, I don't know how you guys felt, but, like, I know Plant hasn't gotten to this point. But,
I'm right at it. I'm, okay, I you're just before got to it. The forest.
You're before it. And I don't know how you guys felt, but, like, some of the action sequences that I've done are in the biggest environments. Environments that are almost as big as, like, a Gears of War map, a multiplayer map. Like, enormous for a single-player campaign. And the amount of freedom and, like, control over that, like, realm, like, what you're doing, how you're interacting with enemies, how you're dealing with the situation, like, hiding behind a box as you're healing yourself, and, like, there's a tense moment where the guy is, like, walking up on you, is really remarkable, and it really kind of codified why people really dig this game. Apart from the story, which is obviously a big draw, but it's pretty innovative what they've done with all of the systems at work, and you don't really see that in the first 5 hours, so I would just say stick with it for people that are kind of not happy with what goes on before
I'm going to keep playing it, but it just drives me batshit with video games in general. I can't think of any other medium where people are like, just give it 6 hours. Just
I know.
Give it,
I,
just give it 20 hours.
I completely agree. I think,
like,
that's crap.
Oh my gosh. Even like a book, I feel like it's like after an hour, you're in it. No matter what. You either know you're done with it or not. It's just, it drives me crazy that I have to commit this much time in my life to something that generally isn't as enriching. I mean, hopefully this is. But
I would argue, first of all, I think, Rush, you're exactly right. The game starts amazing and then slides into something like mediocrity and then becomes really, really interesting. But it's only after that stretch of time where they're sort of trying to tell you what to do.
It's a tutorial.
Confusing,
like,
yes. And it is
a 5-hour tutorial.
Right. And it's also a super confusing and frustrating tutorial.
Yeah.
At times, but there is a moment, like you said, where they just let you go. They sort of assume that you know what's going on, and that's where the game gets great to me.
Does it stay like that, Dave?
Yes, it absolutely does.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. I know the point you're talking about. About halfway through, it when they really take the wheels off, it's fantastic. And I think what we're bumping up into is actually really interesting, because I think it's a question of authorship versus expectation, I guess. The people making this game know that they're working in a vocabulary that is not so dissimilar from one that's been worked in before. They could have made the assumption that you, the player, are familiar with this gameplay vocabulary that they're using, because it's, again, not that revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I think in doing that, what they could have done is just really let you focus on the narrative of what they're doing. And But I think that that limits the audience for the game, or at least that's the perception, yeah, right?
That just seems so silly to me when it's so complex to play a shooter at this point. Even with that five-hour intro, if you don't know how to play a third-person shooter, you're not going to learn how to play it with that game. There's no way in hell.
Well, I would also I don't think and to address Justin's point, it's important to this doesn't feel at all like a third-person shooter to me, just because you're so weak and powerless with a gun. I mean, you're powerful, but not nearly the level of, I'm a walking tank like you are in a game like Gears of War.
You can decide to shoot at the wrong time and completely screw yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's a mistake to think of it as a third-person shooter, although it looks and behaves like that. I think the game teaches you, based on how bad you are at shooting, that it shouldn't be, that you shouldn't use it like that.
I'd say that's an option. Yeah, Metal Gear is actually a better sort of comparison.
To clarify my point, if you are not, fluent in the language of video games, mm-hmm. I don't think this game is going to teach you how to play it within the first 5 minutes.
Definitely feels like expert level video game to me.
Yeah, I had to bump it. I mean, I think of any game where I have to bump it down to easy to enjoy it. I've been playing video games for over 2 decades. I mean, if I have to bump your game down to easy to have fun, that's a pretty complex game that you've created there.
And for me, normal is a real challenge, and I'm a golden god at video games. So.
He's not kidding. I mean, it's really weird.
This is another thing where video game critic dick measuring drove me crazy, and I think turned me off entirely to the game, and I imagine a few other people, where everything I saw the day that game's reviews came out was, if you didn't like it, you were doing it wrong, and you should be playing it on the hardest setting.
Yeah, that's crap.
And it's great. So not only was I doing it wrong, and the reality is I should have been going easy, I was getting bad advice from people who are psychopaths.
Yeah, I mean, that's an answer I never like hearing, where it's you're not playing the game right if you're not playing on the hardest difficult. That just means the game isn't balanced correctly.
Or just you're not playing it right.
Yeah.
That's just...
Well, the not playing it right is actually kind of an interesting question that I was having this conversation with Chris Grant, our boss. He said that he was bored by the combat because he was able to very methodically... systematically eliminate the enemies by exploiting the AI.
Right, because really he's a robot.
Really taking his time and slowly eliminating them one by one, and he said it was boring. And I had to make the argument for him, and I don't know that there's a right answer one way or the other, but is that a case where if you're bored by the way you're playing it, isn't it fair to design based on the idea that people won't want to play in a way that bores them?
No, I don't think so. I think in this case, the game sort of assumes that you're going to fuck up. Sort of assumes that you're not going to be Chris Grant robot perfectly calculating every percentage of visibility and taking out every guy super, super stealthy. And I think the best moments of this game are when you fuck up, because you're sort of having to deal with the chaos that happens because of that.
That's the way I tried to play it, actually, is that I started stealth with stealth and went methodically, but I didn't, my gut wants me in any game like this to reload a checkpoint, but I made it a point when I was playing The Last of Us to let it roll. When something happens, I wanted to be able to figure out a way to make my way out of that situation. So you kind of get both if you play it that way. You get as much stealth as you can based on your skills, and you also get the combat.
The problem that I had actually with playing it on normal was when I bumped up against the first difficulty spike, which was for me, and you guys have probably got it at this point. I don't know. Have we all finished it?
Okay. I'm only 6 hours in.
You know that first office building that you're trying to clear?
Mm-hmm.
Where I think it's the first time run into clickers, which are these zombies that can hear you but can't see you.
I know the sequence you're talking about, yeah.
And if they hear you, they're going to come for you, and if they touch you, you're dead.
Yeah.
They auto-kill you unless you have a shiv later in the game. But... I had to replay that section when I was playing on normal. I had to replay that section literally 10 times.
It's infuriating.
And it cannot this game cannot hold up to, it is not Rogue Legacy. It cannot hold up to that kind of repeat viewing because it is
you're not
the
having
exact
Joel's
same.
Baby play through it for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I do want to be, it would be unfair to the game, I think, though, to focus on just the mechanical elements, because where I think it really sets itself apart is storytelling. There are beats in this game mm-hmm. that are as good or better than, God, any game I've played before. I mean, there are some things it does so well and so elegantly.
Yeah.
That they really, it shows like a level of faith in the player. I'd like to illustrate that with a little anecdote, and I'm there are lots of little moments like this, so hopefully I'm you know, there's plenty more to discover after I say this, but
I'm worried about spoilers now.
I'm not going to spoil anything for you, don't okay. worry, but if you decide that we shouldn't include it, I won't, but there's a moment close to midway through the game, I guess, not even too deep into it, where you meet another couple survivors, and one of them is a kid, and he picks up a toy in a nursery. It's like a robot, and that he wants to keep with him. And his guardian says, "You know, we only take what we need. You have to leave it." And kind of scolds him. So the kid drops the toy. So you see that scene happen. That cut scene ends. And everyone starts walking out of the room. As I'm walking out, I notice, and this is not like the camera zoomed in on her. It's not like, you know, there was any noise to indicate. Nothing was glowing. I just noticed out of the corner of my eye, Ellie looking at the toy. And I waited for a second because I was like, okay, what's going to happen? I mean, something's going to happen here because she's just kind of hanging out. And I waited and I waited and I waited. Nothing happened. And then I started to walk out of the room, and as I was walking out of the room, out of the corner of my eye, I saw her pick up the toy and put it in her backpack. And it was like, God, that would have been so easy to miss. You know, that would have been, it was such a personal moment for me because it felt so organic. Of course she wasn't going to pick it up while I was watching her, but when my back was turned, she did it. And like, that kind of trust in the player to like invest the time and money into making a beat like that, that maybe not everybody is going to see, maybe most people won't see, really speaks a lot, I think, to the care they took in the storytelling of the game.
I'm right there with you.
I took my headphones off for that whole thing, but I'm sure it was really important.
Good podcast.
It's great.
Keep going. It's really, really good,
yep.
Especially in the second half. It's really good. It's interesting, though, the point you bring up. I mean, would this game have been, as an overall idea, do you guys think it would have succeeded more if it was the sort of game that was easy enough that you could put it in the hands of a non-gamer and they could still sort of get what they were going for?
It's a different reality. I don't know. Whenever I try to think about that,
I don't think so. I mean, Plant hasn't really gotten to a point that's like meant to be a gameplay challenge, or at least gameplay interesting. And I think the reason why this game succeeds, apart from the story, is because of the like constant second-to-second decisions that you're making during combat. And by dialing down the difficulty to like a Gears of War level on normal, for example, it sort of takes all of that tension out. And I think makes it a very different game.
Part of what I like about the game is that there are definite periods of combat intensity or stealth intensity or sneaking intensity. And then there are also very deliberate periods of non-combat, of small exploration.
I can do without the ladders, to be honest.
But they lean on those a bit, or they
literally
make the ladders lean on things, right? But the game is also aware, self-aware enough to know that it's doing that too. So it actually becomes self-referential. Yeah. That balance between the two, I think, is pretty great. It's a it gets better, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And it continues to do so.
Excellent. Well, that's Last of Us. Shall we devolve into halftime?
Yeah. Anybody have anything fun that happened this week?
You know, I saw that White House down to celebrate the birth of our nation.
How realistic would you say it was?
On a scale of, like, one to realistic?
Yeah.
I'd say probably, like, I would say it is the most realistic action movie made this summer. I think that's pretty fair. I can't think of any other action movie that was more realistic than
Would you call The Heat an action movie?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't call anything by Paul Feig an action movie.
Do you think that'll hold up after Pacific Rim?
I'm not positive because a intergalaxy dimensional vortex could open in the ocean tomorrow, and suddenly I would be I'd be a liar.
Sounds like a big spoiler.
Yeah, sounds like the trailer. But yeah, it's good. Channing Tatum, looking good. Jamie Foxx is our president. You know what I liked about this movie is that it's like shamelessly political, which all of his movies are. The guy who made Independence Day and Day After Tomorrow. But it is the Obama fantasy of like this guy gets elected and he's like young and, you know, full of big ideas, and then he doesn't really do anything. But then he has a big idea to pull all of the soldiers out of everywhere in the Middle East. And those weapon industry people, they're not for it. And then White House down.
That sounds like a huge spoiler. Now we know the motivation.
This is welcome to the first 5 minutes of this movie when they cue you into everything.
Wait, are you telling me that White House goes down?
The White House goes down. Here's a great spoiler. One of the characters, the hacker, is, you know, the really creepy people from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yeah.
The milky guy is the, like, lead hacker of the movie, and he does great. There are a lot of great character actors in this movie. That's why you should go see it. That's all. That was my weekend. I saw one movie, I went back to hibernation, and then I woke up and went to work.
I set off fireworks.
Oh, look at you.
That's cool. I did that too.
They were lame though. Like, we went and got like a $25 multi-pack of fireworks.
Those are always, yeah.
And all of them were like friendship fountain, and it's just like, hey, some sparks come out of a box.
I like to run through those.
Do you?
I think that's fun.
Yeah, like around like 4 or 5.
Run through the sparks. Just feel alive. My skin tingles with the possibility of danger.
Yeah.
Do you spell your name?
In what?
In the air? With the
sparkler? No, that's a sparkler. That's
as
different.
I'm running? J-U-S-T-I-N!
I missed something. I'm so sorry.
Cursive.
The spark fountains. You know, like you put them on the ground, you light them, and then they're just ejecting.
Dave, you come from the land where fireworks were invented.
It's true.
Ohio?
China, right? He's from China. No, Ohio probably has fireworks out the ass, right?
We do. Phantom Fireworks is from here. They're really big.
Are you jaded?
They had some unfortunate incidents with fireworks in the past in Ohio. Yeah, that Scottstown, was that Ohio? West Virginia. It might have been here.
I don't know.
I want to hear a great story about someone in Michigan who's stupid and they went to Ohio and they messed everything up.
What?
So, in Michigan...
Oh, God.
Fireworks.
Chris Plant is a... What are they? Ohio State Okies? You're an Okie? God,
shut up.
Anyway, he hates Michigan, so we should couch that story with this.
Michigan people are dumb, anyway. So, they don't have the fireworks, right? They're illegal. So, you have to go into Ohio to buy your fireworks. But Michigan people are too stupid to be allowed to cross state lines. So, this guy from Michigan goes into one of the giant fireworks tents...
Wait, they're in a tent?
Yeah, they're in a big tent.
Safe.
And it's been very hot and dry.
Oh, no.
And he lights a cigar.
Good.
And the person's like, don't do that in slow motion. And the guy's like, oh, this? So he throws it.
I've done that.
He just throws it and lights the entire place up.
Okay.
It explodes.
Okay.
He's dead.
He died.
He died.
Did anyone else die?
Don't, I can't confirm how many people died, but okay. I do know he died.
That sort of makes it hard to make fun of.
No, it's an Ohio story. Basically, anything that happens that's tragic in Ohio, in
Florida,
because
some dumb Michigan
you can make
guy
jokes
didn't.
About it. Because it's like the Darwin Awards. Like.
But Dave Tech's from Ohio. He could have known that guy.
He's from East Ohio.
He could have been born in that fireworks tent.
The stupidity of Michigan.
Dave Tech, were you born in that fireworks tent?
Yes.
Do you guys know a guy that'll sell you illegal fireworks? Like dirty
stuff.
Oh, I
know a guy.
What? Like an M80?
Like, yeah, like the.
I get you one. You need an M80?
I need a Roman candle as well. I like those. That's
Are
like
those illegal?
That shoots things at the end makes me feel like a wizard. You hold it, makes you feel like a wizard. Magic coming out of your wand, you feel like a wizard. Happy birthday, America. I'm your wizard king. Dave Tack, what'd you play this week?
Well, I've been playing, other than Animal Crossing, three things. So I played The Last of Us. I am wrapping up Dishonored, which I never did.
Great game.
Yeah. And also, because it was on PlayStation Plus and I'd never gotten around to it, I've been playing Deus Ex. Human Revolution. Awesome. All of those.
ZZ, yeah. ZZZZ, boring.
What? You're crazy.
That game was boring. I didn't like that game.
I'm not super far into it.
You bored yet?
No, because I'm still learning. And which is actually what I wanted to talk about. Segue. all three of those games happen to be, turn out to be sort of stealthy. And I think I have finally figured out after many years of playing stealth games what might be the best way to start playing a stealth game. Because I like stealth, first of all. I understand that lots of people don't, and that's fine. But I would rather, if given the option, do the stealthy thing, sort of not be seen if I don't have to, choke somebody instead of stab somebody. And I always tend to finish a game without doing that, because I never quite figure out the stealth mechanic.
Sure.
And having played three of these back-to-back, simultaneously, whatever, I started to realize that what the best way to approach a stealth game might be, and it
Wait,
seems
is that
to
your
be,
best?
Yes. The best okay. way to approach a stealth game.
Got it.
Might be to start by poking at it. By figuring out exactly where you need to be next to a clicker in The Last of Us before the clicker sees you, you know, because you might play that part 15 times and not know why you died every time, or to figure out what somebody's line of sight is in Dishonored or all of that. And it never occurred to me. I always just guessed and felt really tense for, you know, a decade and a half of playing stealth games. But now I just realize if I spend the beginning of the game poking at the box and
like
figuring out
exactly,
yeah,
screwing up,
right, breaking, figuring out what doesn't work and what stealth is, then I don't have to walk around wondering what I'm doing all the time. And I wondered if you guys ever did that or if you like stealth.
Here's the thing: I play stealth games like real life, where I only have one life, and if I get spotted and die, I throw the disc out the window. So I've never done that.
Wow,
that's intense.
Yeah.
I like games where I don't have to do that. Like, what is it? Ninja? Way of the Ninja? Shadow of the Ninja? What is it?
Mark of the Ninja?
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. Mark of the Ninja. And I felt that way with Dishonored, too, where I didn't. There were enough clues or skills I had where I didn't have to spend a lot of time learning where the boundaries were. It drives me crazy in a game where I have to, like, figure out how they coded it to enjoy the game. So the second I have to do that, and that's why I've had so much trouble with the beginning of Last of Us, it just drives me nuts. But apparently it gets away from that, so.
Yeah.
Well, not really. Visibility is still pretty important in Last of Us, and knowing like when you're going to be spotted and not is very important. I agree that it definitely helps to know the boundaries, but I also agree, like Plant was saying, that games that make it very clear for whatever reason, whether it's through visual cues or HUD elements or whatever, tend to make stealth a lot more approachable for people that don't ordinarily play stealth games. So developers should do that.
I loved in Dishonored, and if there's a game that has executed on this better, I don't know what it is, but I loved in Dishonored how there was a moment where things would go sideways, and when it went sideways, you found that there was another perfectly good game there. Yes. I mean, it was just another, you know, it was not punitive, it was not bad, it was just sort of like, well, this is what we're doing now, I guess. Like, and, yeah. And that's felt very realistic, right? You wouldn't be able to, and of course realism is so stupid in a game where you can teleport 5 feet and you have a heart that talks to you, but it felt very true to the situation that, like, well, I can't go back to my plan, I can't unfuck this, so I have to kind of keep pushing through, and I love that about Dishonored.
I love that in games in general that have multiple layers where you think you're playing one type of game and it reveals itself to be another. I think that's why GTA has always been so popular. That idea of, like, I'm on a mission. Oh crap, I screwed up. Suddenly I'm in a police chase. Something else is happening. And to get away from this, now I'm going to go jump off a bridge, or I'm going to be on a boat, where the type of game that you're playing is constantly evolving. Only in GTA, never what you expected.
Only in GTA can you get the visceral thrill of leaping from one middling gameplay experience to yet another.
No, they're actually all better, because the traditional game is just, hey, can you drive from point A to point B? It'll take you about 30 minutes, and you have to shoot somebody.
See, this is why Saints Row is better, because it's, can you drive from point A to point B, and it turns out that halfway through your car, it's a dinosaur.
And there's a tiger in it.
And it's got a giant cock.
Yeah, I see. I like both. I like the idea of rolling with the punches, you know, being stealthy, and then just playing it out, like I said, with The Last of Us. And then the complete opposite of that, which is the way I've been playing Dishonored, is completely stealthy. And it means I don't. It means that the only time I ever get to engage in combat by my own design is when I screw up, and then I just start fighting people because.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
Because that's how you get your rocks off, you weirdo.
Hey, guys, want to hear my thing of the week?
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Do you know what this week is?
It's July.
It's the 5-year anniversary of the App Store.
Really?
I'm sorry. That's much more important than.
No, I was surprised.
What's your
initial
superlative?
It's the best anniversary of the week, and it's beating the 30th anniversary of the Famicom. Because don't worry, we're gonna come back to it when it's released in America. Because that's what mattered to me. Because it was the year of my birth. Oh my God, I'm gonna be 30.
How old are you now?
27.
So in this fantasy reality, this show lasts another 3 years.
Oh, great. Well, hey, you know what? That's okay. As long as I last another 3 years, that's good. So the App Store, 5 years. How amazing is that? That before that, there wasn't even an App Store on your iPhone. That there was no App Store. You just had apps. And then one day, you have some really mediocre Ingimoco games to play wherever.
Wait.
Whenever you want.
I don't remember this.
Yeah.
So the App Store launched after the iPhone
launched? After the iPhone.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Yep.
How did you get apps?
You had the apps.
What does that mean? Right.
You had the apps.
It came with the apps.
Right. And there was a point at which Apple was just saying, make web apps. They'll be fine.
They
came out with the App Store.
Yeah. And then everything changed. And in those 5 years, we've gone from Ingimoco becoming what it is now.
Ingimoco was a big deal back then. And now
they had such an opportunity, and they wasted it every which way.
Well, that being said, they probably make way more money than they did then, now.
Yeah, but they could have been huge.
They could have been like Zynga level.
Oh, big.
Massive.
I mean, and they also had like the hold on the whole achievement system, and basically their lack of. I mean, it seemed like Apple was pretty cool with that until they didn't innovate on it in any way.
Well, no, Apple just pretty much did their own thing.
Yeah.
And one of them.
What was the big? What was the first? There were a handful of Ingimoco games that were Rolando. That was
Rolando,
the big first.
And there was
one, right?
Also the doctor one where you could cut.
Oh yeah,
which is still a great game.
Oh, it's
which
a
one? I don't.
Yeah.
The Quix ripoff. It was like Quix, Kix, QIX. That game. I forget what the NGMOCO version was called. Yeah, no, they had really good games. They were, like, the first, like, legit developer trying to, like, make good mobile games. And it really, I mean, at least one of the first. Now we have so many.
Yeah. But now we have XCOM and Limbo. Yeah. And
well, let's name a mobile game that actually came out on mobile first before we start going down the list.
Oh, I mean, well, I just think that's impressive in general that you can port to it.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I don't think that's so bad.
Yeah.
Okay, Drop 7.
Drop 7.
The best game of the last decade.
Okay, you're a madman.
That's right? Crazy.
Hey, I've played it more than anything, if we want to go by hours.
That's a lie.
You got
that's
a problem. Not a lie. My stepmom's played Farmville more than anything. It doesn't make it a great game.
Yeah.
Drop 7 is a great game.
Do you feel... It's funny. I saw someone comment. They made a bunch of games free on the anniversary. And I saw someone comment that it was a great way to mark 5 years of devaluing games by making some of the best games free. And
zing.
It's not a completely hollow criticism.
No.
I mean, I think that, like, for all the good the App Store has done, I think it's, I don't know. I think it's made it kind of hard, financially speaking, to make a lot of really worthwhile, not worthwhile, but more expansive games, let's say.
Yeah, absolutely. On the platform. You can't.
I think that's crazy.
What?
I think that's absolutely insane.
You can't sell. I mean, selling a game.
No one's tried.
Are you crazy?
The XCOM is like the first game where somebody is trying to put a decent price marker and a level of quality that matches
that's,
it.
That's
okay, like, but then you could argue like Square does that all the time.
What else? Square marks their things up like crazy.
I know.
Square sells $20 games. It should be $5. That are $5 anywhere else.
I'm just saying the vast majority of games and the games that are successful are either $1 or $3 when on any other platform, PC, Mac, you name it, they would at least be like $5 or $10.
XCOM is not even a great example because this is a game that has recently been established as being a $50 or $60 game.
Right.
But that's not true anymore either because it's constantly on sale for $25 to $30.
But you can make the... How much are they selling it for on mobile?
It's $20.
$20.
Well, I mean...
It's a smaller version of the game.
It's very... What did they change, by the way? I haven't played it.
I think it's like a third of the maps or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I just think there's a long way to go, and I think the devaluing thing is a tired argument that was pushed out by companies like Nintendo that were unwilling to move with.
No, I think there are indie developers that struggle with like there are like interesting indie games that should be sold for more than a dollar, but the only way to get the attention of people is to sell them for a dollar. Like, I honestly believe that.
Yeah, I think it's definitely changing, and I think it will continue to change as more things come out on that platform and as that platform expands.
Yeah, I think once Apple wakes up and figures out a good way to get their games on a television, you'll see a very different understanding of like what value is and like what prices should be for those games. But
the crazy thing is how much has changed in the 5 years because of that platform.
You know what bums me out though about the how much has changed?
What?
Not nearly as many fart apps as there used to be, or lighter apps,
I don't know if you saw Peter Molyneux's interview on Game Informer about fart apps. It is superb.
Really?
It's really good.
Wow. He rates them.
The other thing is with the devaluing, I will say, even if it is true, which I personally don't believe, the fact that all of these games actually had a place to come out and all these indie developers have become as successful as they are, which who knows if they would have on any other platform.
You're still talking about like 1% of games.
1% is better than 0%. I mean, there have been a lot more success stories.
Wait, 1% is better than nope? I'll have to check on that math. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of people who wouldn't be successful without an open platform like it is.
That's true.
That's all.
Three guys in a room.
And all of Rovio.
but it is definitely has changed the gaming space for the better, I would say. Democratization of game publishing pretty much started on the App Store and has spread. Well, I guess Steam was before the App Store, but you know, App Store made it like mainstream and popular, and I think we're all better off with it. How's that for a nice little wrap up?
I love it.
It was the best wrap up.
It was so good. It was the best wrap up. As a result, I'm going to give the award to Russ Freshtick for best wrap up.
Best wrap up.
Yay.
You did it. Congratulations,
but it was for my
Russ.
Thing.
Yeah, but I trumped you.
No, you didn't.
I did. I won the whole week.
So proud of you right now, Russ.
God.
I always believed in you, and I believe you listening at home. I believe that you've spent another hour-ish of your life listening to us. And I certainly appreciate you joining us. If you want more, you can go to polygon.com. I hear the cooperatives are coming back for season two. Is that going to drop this week?
Monday. Gonna... It'll drop Monday.
Monday. Oh, I'm excited. We've got so much more content on the site. Lots of good stuff for you to enjoy. So go lap it all up. It's polygon.com. You can follow us at Polygon. Facebook.com/Polygon. YouTube.com/Polygon. Tumblr. We're polygon.com.tumblr.com. And so many other places that I can't remember right now. But most of all, we appreciate you listening to our podcast. We wish you'd go and rate it, subscribe to it, and tell all your buddies, your friends, that there's this great thing, this amazing, life-changing podcast.
And while you're there, you might want to look at this new podcast called Sawbones, which is on the iTunes App Store.
I'm not familiar with it. Where is it?
It's excellent. It's this adorable married couple, and they talk about medical maladies and oddities.
Medical mysteries?
It is. Well, that too. I mean, it is superb.
I hear they come out on Fridays just like our show. And
their
episode this week is about plague medicine. So
what? Plague medicine?
Wow, you know a lot about this show.
Wow. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I'm on it. So thank you so much for listening to our podcast. We're the Besties. We'll join you next week to talk about games.
Our only listeners.
Make sure to join us again on Friday for the Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best things?
Besties!